The following podcast is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. Believe it or not, we didn't have to do two takes to start. Scott did not try to talk through the intro today.
It was hard to resist.
Shocked as anyone.
We always struggle with that disclaimer when we have to put that in.
Yeah, and then Scott wants to say something or cough into the microphone. Or
maybe I can screw it up at the end.
The night is
Fingers
young.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, we can.
Morning is early. I don't know. Anyway, I'm Katie Givens. I'm not a lawyer.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
Kelly Turner, not a doctor.
So as you listen out there, on Wednesday, February the 12th, everybody knows what happened in the Super Bowl.
Oof.
But we are recording on Sunday, February the 9th.
Yeah.
So we don't know what's going to happen tonight.
No.
You guys want to make a quick prediction?
I'm going to say they're going to go with Taylor Swift again. Yeah.
She's not a player on the team.
Really? She gets more airtime than the rest of them. I'm just going to say they want the Chiefs to win, so they're going to win.
All right. Chiefs.
I mean, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a prediction.
That's my prediction.
Our desire. This is our prediction.
Right. Chiefs.
Katie?
Well, you know how I feel about the Chiefs, so I'm going to have to go with Chiefs.
Katie's staring daggers at me right now.
All right.
She does not agree with me.
I will take the Eagles.
Good for you. Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to come down to whoever has the ball last. I think it's going to be a great game.
Win.
Me too. Jalen Hurts, former Alabama player. So that's
great guy.
The extent of my.
Super. And look, Dante
Smith.
I don't dislike anybody on the team of the Chiefs.
Right.
It's just, you know.
All the hype.
Everybody's tired of them. Except Katie. Yeah. Katie's not tired of them.
Katie. And a bunch of 14-year-old screaming girls.
I mean, that sums me up, kind of.
My husband told me, he said, I hear the Kelce brothers just sold their podcast for like so many millions of dollars to Amazon.
Million.
Yeah.
He's like, why can't you do that?
Yeah. Well, save us a seat at next year's podcast convention. We're working on it.
I said, there's nothing that they have to say that I really want to hear that's worth $100 million. I'm not saying that those two guys are not interesting, because they are.
Yeah.
But for $100 million?
Well, they have that last name will draw 100 million listeners.
I was gonna say the ad revenue has to be insane.
Yeah, that's all to be insane. That's all about.
All right, we're gonna all change our last names to Kelce. My name's Kelly Kelce. I'm not a doctor.
Katie Kelce, not a lawyer.
Scott Kelce, mediocre journalist.
Here we are,
there,
guys.
It's done.
We're on the road. We're on the right road to sell our podcast.
Maybe so.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of football.
Yeah.
You know, Scott's a huge Steelers fan, if you didn't
huge
know.
Huge Steelers.
Huge, ginormous.
I'm looking at your Steelers cup.
And I've got seven.
And I want to know, when is the last time you've washed it?
I've washed all of the logo off of it. That's why it looks so bad. I've washed it so many times. I've had it so long that the logo is barely visible on the side.
Good.
But the Steelers are a working class team. So I want a working class Yeti.
They are. They're a team for the blue collar folks.
Exactly.
Right.
Katie, what were you going to say?
Well, they're supposed to be playing in Ireland in the fall, is what I'm hearing.
Yes, they are. Scott, I'm going. I've texted everybody. I'm going. It'll be sometime around Labor Day.
Have you ever been to Ireland?
No.
Go.
Two birds, one stone.
Have a
Steelers
Guinness draft.
And Ireland.
Have a Guinness draft. Yeah. I know you don't do beer.
I will that day.
Have a Guinness draft.
Yeah.
You got to.
Because Shane claims that we're going to.
Go.
Yeah.
And he was telling me that Scott knew the date. And I looked it up. I said, there's not a date yet.
No.
And he said, Scott knows it. And so I said.
No, I was just speculating. It's sometime around Labor Day. It's the first game of the season. Mm-hmm. And August is preseason in the NFL.
Just go the whole week before and spend the whole week there.
I mean, it's going to be a several day trip. Plan.
I'll just do the podcast by myself that week. And I'm happy about it.
Maybe we can call in.
Call in from Ireland.
If we can figure out remote podcasting by then,
maybe we can.
Yeah.
Or Katie can.
People do it all the time.
I'm not going to figure it out.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, that's the plan. And I don't even care if I go to the game. Mm. I just want to be there in Ireland, the atmosphere, a bunch of American Steelers fans running around.
That'd be fun.
And we could watch it in the bar across the street. Are they playing in Dublin? Yes.
Oh.
And I forget the name of the stadium, but it is it's a soccer stadium. They're in Dublin. So.
And Steelers are the home team, right?
Steelers will be the home team, but they haven't announced the opponent. They haven't announced the specific date. I'm assuming that will happen in April when the NFL draft is held.
Here's what's going to happen to y'all. It's going to be the Chiefs. You're not going to get a damn ticket. You're not going to get a flight there. Ireland is going to be overcrowded.
See, that's what I don't
want. That's what's
going
to happen to you.
I want it to be somebody crappy like the Bears.
Maybe it'll be
Sorry, Chicago, if you're listening. Aww. Yeah.
Well, maybe so.
Yeah.
It probably...
We'll find out in a few weeks.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll keep you posted. But I've already ordered an Ireland travel guide.
Of course.
And yes. I've already checked. Of course I have. Yes. And I've already checked on. And basically flights right now, they're about $1,800 a seat.
Eat fish and chips in Ireland. Got it. I know that's typically a London, England type thing. Eat them in Ireland.
Okay.
And have a Guinness on draft there. It's different than over here. I'm not lying to you.
Okay. And just by coincidence, I just finished the show on Apple TV. It is called Bad Sisters. I've told you guys about it.
Mm-hmm. It's on the plate.
Yeah. And it's set in Ireland. And they're these beautiful camera shots, drone shots of the coastline. Gorgeous. When it just made me want to go even more.
Mm-hmm. You're going to love the place. You're going to love the people.
Yeah.
You're going to love everything about it. Cool. Buy some wool. Something wool that's made there.
While I'm there?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, something there.
You don't mean to take with me when I go?
No, buy theirs.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like they're made in Ireland.
Business. Yeah.
Got
it. Give them business.
Will do.
Yep. Have a good time.
I'm on it.
I know churches are not your thing, but if you want to see a gorgeous church.
Oh, sure. I'm all over that.
Go to St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Yes, absolutely.
It's in Dublin. Mm-hmm. Enjoy.
Yeah, I love
Just
that.
Just enjoy.
Okay.
It's beautiful.
We will talk about it some
so
more.
Excited.
I'm sure I will be picking your brain.
Great. I'm excited for y'all. You're going to love it.
Very fun.
Okay. Did we have a shout out?
I have a shout down.
Okay. Ooh. Well, but first, let me do this. I want to give a shout out to Shorty for filling in for me last week.
He did
week.
A good job.
I
really
listened
good job.
And enjoyed. Mm-hmm. It made my drive back from Atlanta so much more pleasant.
Yeah.
So,
he had
thank
some,
you, Shorty.
He had some good insights. We were talking about the story and maybe a different angle on the story that neither Katie nor I had thought of.
I was like, dang, I didn't think about that, Shorty.
So he did a good job.
Thank you so much. I'm so appreciative.
Okay, so a shout down.
Oh yeah,
to my friend, my good friend Tabitha Combs.
Okay,
who used to listen to the show, but doesn't anymore for reasons that she did not go into detail about. I think it has something to do with the fact that I once referred to her as my bar wife in front of her boyfriend Chris.
Way to go, Scott.
Who he doesn't listen either. So shout down to him as well.
Pissing off people left and right.
Well, I have my work wife Denny, who's a fantastic friend of the show.
Love Denny.
And then I have
we love Tab.
My bar
I love
wife,
Tab.
Yes, we love
Tab. Tabitha.
I'm sorry, Tab, that Scott has offended
She's
you.
She's not
going to
hear you.
Boyfriend.
I told you she doesn't listen anymore.
Dang it, Scott. Why do you do the things you
I
do?
I don't know. Anyway, that was my shout down.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm shouting you out, Tab, in hopes that you'll welcome Katie and myself back into your life.
I will tell her that we did this when I see her again. Maybe we can get her back on the wagon.
When you see her again tomorrow.
There's nothing,
tomorrow, when I see her again
there's
tomorrow.
Nothing going on between Scott and Tabitha other than he sits at the bar and bothers
except
her.
An exchange of alcohol and money. That's it.
And Chris knows.
Yeah. He probably, he does. He knows. Okay, is there anything else that we need to do before we get to this story today?
Nope, and I hear you're going to spook us out or
it was
creep
terrifying.
Us out.
It was terrifying. So. I was getting ready just to come here, and I was at the house by myself, and I freaked myself out like 3 or 4 times, turned around, my cat's sitting on the back of the couch, and I scream, scare the cat, just that'll get the heart rate going.
Well, you've seen those videos on when somebody accidentally frightens a cat, and then before the cat can get stopped, it's destroyed everything in the kitchen. At least that didn't happen.
Yeah,
could have been worse.
She just took off running and hid, so she'll be okay. Yep. Anyways, she had her calming chews this morning, but I have not, apparently. So anyways, this story starts off with a spooky story, an urban legend, if you will. It is the inspiration for it. Have you ever heard of the story about the boy who hid in the walls and murdered some people?
That sounds like something that I have vaguely shoved into the back of my head somewhere, but I don't know why or when.
Was there one of the Psycho movies where the guy had like painted himself as part of the wall? Was it one of the many Psycho movies or was that something else?
I know that happened in Predator with
Predator.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, but it was mud. He covered himself in mud so that the predator couldn't pick up his heat signature.
I was thinking there was a movie where the killer or the bad person or whatever painted themselves as part of the wall. And
there probably was.
I'm sure there is.
Freaky.
Yeah.
Okay, so go ahead.
I was Katie. Predator is this movie that came out in 1987. I think
I've been to the site where Predator was filmed.
Shut up.
Mm-hmm, Mexico.
All right.
where the helicopter is and all.
One of Arnold's many Academy Award winning films.
But I haven't seen the movie.
Of course not.
But I've been to the side where it was filmed.
All right. Sorry.
Okay. That's all right. Here we go. So let's talk about this urban legend story. So this girl who's about 15 years old starts receiving phone calls from a guy who says he goes to school with her, describes himself as a jock, tall, blonde, you know, what he perceives that girls would find attractive, yeah. Right? They talk on the phone for a while. He eventually gets up the courage to ask her out on a date. He shows up to pick her up. And the person standing on the other side of the door when she opens it is not a tall, blonde-haired, you know, athlete. Mm-hmm. It's a very disheveled-looking, dark-headed guy with poor hygiene and kind of looks a little, ooh, out there. For whatever reason, she agrees to still let him take her to the fair that night. They go to the fair. In their conversation, he learns that recently, I don't know exactly how recently, but her mother had passed away from cancer. He becomes weirdly interested in that topic, asking her things like how her mother felt right before she died. Did she suffer? Things that people don't normally ask when you find out someone's lost a loved one.
Well, and it's not first date material either.
No, not at all. So she gets weirded out by this and makes an excuse and then comes home after, you know, an hour and a half on the date. Mm-hmm. Done.
I left the iron on.
Yeah, got to go back home.
Right.
So she lives at home. She's 15. Her sister is 10, I believe. And I've heard some reports that her sister was 11-ish. She's younger yep. sister. And then their father. So the three of them live there. So after this date, as the weeks pass, the girls start hearing knocking on the walls.
Mm-hmm. I have heard this story.
And they're home and they try to tell their father that something weird is going on. He doesn't really, it's pipe or something in the wall. They start coming home to things being gone from their home, things moved around in their home. Things knocked over, just weird stuff. It, kind of like Golden State Killer stuff where people would come in and notice something missing, but then kind of dismiss it. Mm-hmm. But it was a little bit more obvious that someone had been in the home. They eventually hear some knocking in the basement. They go down to the basement. Written on the wall in the basement, it says, "I'm in your room. Come find me." So they run out of their home to the neighbors where the dad is. They're yelling at the dad like, "Oh my gosh, this is really happening." He's thinking his daughters have not adapted well or haven't dealing with their mother's death, that they're just messing with each other. And he's getting really ticked off by this point. And so he comes home. By the time they walk in, all the TVs are on wide open, blaring. Couple of radios wide open. Things are knocked over. He sees the stuff in the basement. He goes up to the girl's room. In the corner, he sees a teenage boy standing there wearing his wife's wedding dress, covered in some kind of red paint with a knife. On the wall, it says, "Marry me."
Good
he
grief.
Runs out. Guy disappears. They never find him again. Okay, that's the urban legend, right?
Yes.
More of that than I would like is actually true.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to get into the story and tell you what is actually true. And when you search this case, you are hit with that story first and foremost every time.
Uh-huh.
And then you have to pick through court documents and old newspaper stuff and some authors who have covered the case to figure out what actually happened to get you as close to the truth as possible.
All right.
Okay. So let's start with our boy in the wall, shall we? Let's find out who that is.
Is that the title of today's episode?
The Boy in the Wall?
Yeah.
Probably not. That's the title of a book and a movie from Lifetime. Mm-hmm. So we probably won't steal that.
Sounds like a pretty good description, but hey, it's your episode.
Yeah, we'll figure out a good title. Okay. I don't know what it is. Okay, but Daniel LaPlante is the guy's name, and he was born in 1970. He lived in Townsend, Massachusetts. Would you like to guess the name of the street he lived on?
Elm Street.
Yep, he did. He absolutely did. This is a little town on the outskirts of Boston. Now, during school and growing up, everyone described Daniel as odd. It was pretty evident that he had some mental health issues. He had difficulty with hygiene. He was diagnosed with dyslexia and hyperactivity. But everybody just sort of said, he's a weirdo. You know, growing up in the 70s and early 80s, he's a weirdo.
He's the same age as me. I was born in 1970.
No one wanted to be around him. And he didn't really help his case either. He struggled socially. He was just not good at that. Mm-hmm. That was not Daniel's thing. And so he was referred to a psychiatrist in his teen years through his school. And that's when he was finally diagnosed with hyperactivity. But Danny is going to start becoming a little thief as he gets older. And by the age of 15, he's breaking into properties in the area. He's taking jewelry, money, anything he thinks might be valuable. And he gets into trouble with the law a few times for doing this. Then
Is this a cry for attention?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But he also discovers that he really doesn't, the thieving part is not what's important. He likes breaking in and messing with people.
Okay. Mm.
So then he starts doing what I was talking about with the Golden State Killer stuff, breaking in, moving things around, just sort of making it noticeable that someone's been there, but something that you might dismiss.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that? Gone into your house and something wasn't quite where you thought it should be and you just dismiss it?
Yeah. Well, I've got enough cats running around that if something's knocked over, I have a reasonable explanation for why it probably happened.
And there always is.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like things not being where I left them.
Same.
Well, this story's not going to help that. So he would also leave things in people's homes and eventually just started playing mind games with other people. And that's where we enter our family with the father and the two daughters. They're actually real people. They're the Bowens. It's Frank Bowen and his daughters, Tina and Karen. Tina is the older one. Karen is the younger one. So he starts breaking into their home. He first takes a few things. Then he might break in and leave a television on. Or the girls will get up from a room and go do something and they come back and the television's on a different channel. Mm-hmm. So he's not only doing things while they're gone, he's doing things while they're there, but mostly when it's just the girls there to just mess with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Frank is going to realize that the stories the girls are telling him, it's not the girls messing with each other. When he comes home one night with his two daughters and their friend Kathleen, and they have noticed, according to one of the cops who worked the case, that someone had used one of their downstairs toilets.
Uh-oh.
And so Frank does a search of the home and eventually finds Daniel LaPlante in a closet in one of the rooms, and he's wearing what has been described as a hairy jacket or a furry jacket.
I'm going with furry.
Furry, yeah. Something like, yeah. And face paint. And his hair is spiked up in one report. But it's more like Native American war paint. That's on his face, that they sort of the way they describe it. Okay, so he has a hatchet in one hand and a steel wrench in the other. And he calmly tells the father to get the girls all together. And he kind of backs them up towards a bedroom. And Frank shoves the girls in. He runs in. He shuts the door and barricades it. So,
okay.
Daniel can't get in. Now, in the meantime, Tina, who it was reported more than once, had actually gone out on a date with Daniel LaPlante. Mm-hmm. I had some stories say they had dated. Mm-hmm. I had some say that it was one date and it was weird and she didn't want to go out with him again.
Sounds about right.
So that had actually happened. She goes out the window of that bedroom and runs to the neighbor's house. They call the police and the cops come, but Daniel has run off. They can't find him. And they don't really know that this is Daniel at the moment because he's kind of disguised himself and they really couldn't, they couldn't give an accurate description of what this intruder looked like.
Yeah.
So they're not sure where to look or where to go. And they haven't really attached this to Daniel just yet. They haven't, you know, linked, I guess, linked this crime to him. But 2 days later, on December the 10th, this happened on December the 8th, 1986. On December the 10th, when Frank comes home, let me back up. The cops say, you can't stay here. You
Makes
need to go
sense.
Get a hotel room. Yeah. They probably were. Yeah, but no, we're not
Yeah, they're upstairs
here.
Packing right now.
Yeah.
Thanks for the idea.
Yes. So 2 days later, Frank comes back to the home to get some of their things, and he sees a man up in the window as he approaches the door, so he calls the cops. The officer who responded goes into the home, and he says that he saw a knife sticking out of the wall, and it was sticking through a family photo. And written beside that in magic marker, I'm still here, come find me. Then he goes down the hall looking into the home and finds another knife in the wall through another family photo that says, I'm going to kill you all. So he calls for backup.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's one officer here.
Yeah, the two of them come on back. Come on in with him. And they eventually find that Daniel is hiding behind a wall in a bathroom. And the officer who's there, he says, quote, I pulled my pistol and said, I've got the son of a bitch right here. But he didn't move. So I told him, let me see your hands or I will splatter your brains all over that wall.
Okay.
That's a quote that he gave to the Boston Globe. So he was, or was it the Boston Globe? Could have been the Boston Globe, or it could have been the Celtic Sentinel. There are two newspapers that cover that, but okay. I'll reference them both, then you can check them out and see their coverage of this. So he was arrested, and he was in a juvenile facility. That was in December of 86. He's finally bailed out in 1987 in October when his mom remortgaged her home in order to bail him out.
So he spent some time.
He did.
Several months.
He did. So he is bailed out. And we will tell you, Danny is going to get bailed out and he's going to get really busy. Right back to work. We'll tell you all about that after a word from our sponsors.
Hello, Cherokee County. If you are looking for a health option where the staff makes you feel like family, then you don't have to look any further than Cherokee Family Healthcare.
Cherokee Family Healthcare treats patients of all ages with emphasis on personalized care. Call 256-266-1021 to schedule an appointment or just walk right into the office at 819 West Main Street in Center. That's right across from the post office. If you're not feeling well, do that and let them get you returned to good health.
They offer primary care health services, urgent care, DOT physicals, weight loss, IV hydration. You can get same-day appointments and walk-ins are welcome. Like I said, just give them a call at 256-266-1021. They're at 819 West Main Street in Center. That's like kind of right across from the post office.
Right across.
You can't miss it.
Katie and Kelly, let me tell you guys a quick story. Recently, I was dining at Easy Street, and I met a man who told me that he and his wife were planning to retire soon to the Weislake area from out of state. I told him that the best person for him to call to help him find a home in the area is Greg Oliver. Greg is the owner and broker at Go Realty. And if you're like the man that I met who is thinking of moving here, or if you're looking for property or a home anywhere in Northeast Alabama or Northwest Georgia, you should call Greg Oliver at 256-504-3847. Greg has a full list of waterfront, residential, commercial, farm, and investment properties, and he is ready to help you find exactly what you're looking for. Greg has 25 years of experience in the real estate market, and you can see a complete list of his current properties by visiting gregoliverweislake.com. So visit the website or call Greg at Go Realty today. The number is 256-504-3847.
Hey, true crime fans, it's time to start planning your 2025 summer vacation. And why not take it right here in Cherokee County, Alabama?
We have a ton of things to do here in Cherokee County. You can wet a hook in Weiss Lake, swing away at Cherokee Pines Golf Club, take in the breathtaking views at Cherokee Rock Village, hike the National Preserve at Little River Canyon, enjoy an all-day splash at Pirates Bay Water Park, and there's so much more.
The Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism has a full list of lodgings, RV sites, kayak rentals, and campgrounds, and they're all anxious to meet your vacation needs, whatever they may be.
So come stay with us this summer from wherever you are. Plan your Northeast Alabama summer staycation by visiting cherokee-chamber.org.
Thank you to all of our wonderful sponsors. Okay, Kelly, I don't know if I want to hear the rest, but I have to.
Here we go. So he's released in October of 1987. November the 16th, 1987, he breaks into the home of Andrew and Priscilla Gustafson. And they had only been living in the Townsend area for about 5 years. He stole several things from their home, including a cordless phone, cable box, a remote control, you know, things like that that you would think someone would steal and probably sell.
Or again, like you said, just to mess with you, because everybody thinks they know where they left their remote control. Mm-hmm. Not me all the time, but most people know where they left their remote. And if it's in a different spot, that's a WTF moment right there.
Right. Yeah. And then if your phone is missing and your cable box.
Yeah. In 87, if you went to the kitchen and reached onto the wall to use your telephone, Katie, we'll explain that to you later. and it's not there. That's a WTF moment.
Right. And no one is immediately linking this particular thing to Danny, because again, these folks have I don't know, they're just not linking it to him just yet, because these are things that people would steal and sell, which, you know, Danny did do that, but he was mostly known for this stalking incident in the home.
And is this back in his hometown where he was?
Yeah, he moves back home with his mom and his stepfather.
Well, if I'm the cops,
he's living on Elm Street.
The first time somebody finally reaches out to the police, they're going to know who it is.
They do quickly, because multiple homes start having items stolen. And so the police are thinking, okay, you know, but they can't get anything specific. They can't just say, oh, it's Danny, take him back to jail.
Yeah. When you stop thinking you're crazy and you realize somebody's doing it to you, that's when you call the cops, and that's when the pieces start to align.
Right. So on December the 1st, 1987, Daniel enters the home of the Gustafsons again. Now, he's already targeted them, stealing some things. They were not the only ones he targeted, but he just entered back into the home. And the wife, Priscilla, who was 33 at the time and pregnant, I'm not sure how far along she was, but she was several months pregnant, returns home with their son, William, who was 5. She picked him up from a babysitter, and they returned home about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Danny had broken in and he was there. Mm. Now, he later told authorities that normally if this happened, he would just leave the home, but he decided not to today, probably because a couple of weeks before he had stolen 2 guns from the home of another man who had reported them missing, and 22 caliber handguns. Mm. So he's got one of those with him at this point. So he decides to hang around. What ends up happening in that home is pretty horrible. He ends up tying up Priscilla. He rapes her, then shoots her 2 in the back of the head. He then takes the 5-year-old. He locked him in the closet. Then he takes him to a bathroom upstairs and drowns him in the tub.
Good Lord.
In the meantime, there's a 7-year-old daughter who comes home from school, and he drowns her in the bathtub of the downstairs bathroom. And she also had blunt force trauma to the head. So I don't think he was probably in the middle of the other crimes, and she comes home from school and he kills her at that point. Now, Andrew, the husband, comes home around 5:30 and sees his wife murdered. And he panics and calls the police. When the responding officers get there, that's when they find the two children in the bathtubs. The husband completely shut down.
Yeah.
According to his own interview, when he saw his wife, he just lost it and really couldn't, you know, he called the cops, but really just couldn't move.
He was just stuck.
Yeah. So they were able, Abigail, the little girl who was 7, had an 8th birthday coming up the next week. Yep. Just senseless, completely senseless and sickening.
And avoidable.
Absolutely. So they can't find, they suspect pretty immediate that it's Daniel LaPlante.
Right.
Because of all the proximity of the murders, and then they're knowing that there's been some handguns stolen. They linked one of those stolen handguns. That's the murder weapon. And then later on, we're going to find out that the stepfather found the other gun in Daniel's possessions, and they were asking him, where'd you get this gun?
Right.
And he said he had bought it like a year earlier. He gave him some story. Mm-hmm. So that's how they're going to start to link this crime to him, but they suspect him immediately. And so they're trying to find him, and he's on the run. And another woman who lived on Elm Street, he took her car. He held her at gunpoint, made her drive her van down the road. She jumps out of the van, and then he takes off in it. Okay. So that's one of his other neighbors that he does that to. And then they find him nearby in Ayers, Massachusetts, in a dumpster. When they find him hiding in that dumpster, they do find a hair on his sock that matches Priscilla Gustafson. Mm-hmm. So there's more evidence. Now, when you look at the court documents, I wanted to read from that to show you a little more of the specific evidence that they found so that we're not just, you know, just saying, oh, it was Danny and, you know, whatever. So, okay. In 1988, a judge, he was convicted. 3 life sentence in 1988. By the time 1993 rolls around, he's trying to appeal things. And so this is from the documents from the 1993 appeal. So what they find is, in the home, they found semen and sperm cells near one corner of the bedspread, a portion of a condom on the floor beside the bed. They found a knotted brown sock dampened with saliva consistent of something that had been used as a gag. They found a necktie, another sock, stockings, pantyhose that had been knotted and cut to be used to tie people up. In the wastebasket, they found several pieces of paper that were torn from pages of a pornographic magazine, and then just some random beer bottle that had been taken from the refrigerator. So they're finding some things in their home that they're capable of linking to him. And then then with them linking one of those murder weapons to the stolen weapon, also linking the one that was found at his home in his personal items as the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got some good evidence that it was Daniel LaPlante who committed these horrible crimes. So he did not win the appeal in 93 and was sentenced. You're going to do your time, life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In 2017, he sought to be released from prison after a Massachusetts law went into effect that stated juveniles sentenced to life in prison should be given the opportunity to re-enter society.
Mm.
That didn't hold up.
Negative.
Yeah.
He did have a comment during this time where he said, quote, words cannot fully capture what I have done. I murdered 3 innocent people. Because of me, a 5-year-old boy will never turn 6. There's a 7-year-old girl that will never turn 8. Because of me, a woman will never be able to give birth to her 3rd child. I robbed an unborn child of his 1st breath. A husband was never able again to hear from his family, I love you. I do not have the words to fully express my profound sorrow, but I am truly sorry for the harm I have caused. From the very essence of who I am, from the depth of my soul, I am sorry, end quote. That was reported in the, I think it's called the Lowell Sun, the Lowell Sun. I don't know. You can click on that link and see it's a reporting outlet. But the psychiatrists and the people who did those types of evaluations on Daniel during his incarceration time said that he has never shown empathy and continued to minimize his behaviors.
Let me think what that is called.
Mm-hmm.
Sociopath.
Yes.
I mean, you described the classic escalation of a sociopath from starting out with small crimes. Mm-hmm. Edmund Kemper.
Yep.
Golden State Killer. We've talked about this progression many times on this podcast, and there's a classic example of it.
Right. The judge is going to give him 45 years in prison. Is this going to say? Mm-hmm. Nope.
Good.
Done a great. Then in 2019, a separate law goes into effect allowing juveniles convicted of murder to ask for parole after they've served at least 30 years. No.
If you're that sorry, do your time. Mm-hmm. Sit there. Right. Sit there and be sorry.
So he is still incarcerated today.
Good. I hope he hears this podcast. He's kiss my ass, Daniel.
He's your age, Scott.
You're an awful person. So, and he's my age. Yeah,
he is. I'll give you some references here. You can go to joeturnerbooks.com. He has a book called The Boy in the Walls that you can read. He also taps into a lot of that urban legend that is surrounding.
And separates fact from fiction. Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah. You can go to the infamous case of Daniel LaPlante from Dark Down East. It's a website that will give you a good little more of the story. Mm-hmm. And if you want to dive in a little bit deeper. And then there's also some things from some documentaries, some episodes, things I want to give you if you want to look a little bit more into this. Yeah. Of course, you can find 1 million podcasts on this case.
A million and one.
Yeah, now. and so you can, season 2, episode 1 of Investigation Discovery, Your Worst Nightmare. It's called Bump in the Night.
I think that's what that's the I one have you saw. Seen.
Okay. Then there was season 1, episode 2, Lifetime's channel, Frogging. Hide her in my house. That's called Frogging, I've come to learn.
If you're hiding,
with a PH.
Let's frogging. Not name that. Let's not use that for the title of the episode.
Not with an F, with a PH. Yeah. Frogging.
I mean,
okay, Footsteps in the Attic. That's that, you know, it goes into the murders in that one, particular one. Then Investigation Discovery did another, season 1, episode 1 in 2024, The Real Murders on Elm Street, Killer in the Walls.
That's the one I saw.
Oh, that one? Okay.
Yep.
And then you see in 2023... The Lifetime released a film called Boy in the Walls. I think it takes some liberties with the urban legend, but it's a movie, so I think it's probably worth watching. I didn't get to watch it, but...
Based on a true story. The,
probably.
The disclaimer card when the show begins.
I think so. I'm not sure, but as I understand it, it takes some liberties with some of that urban legend there. So anyways, you can check out all kinds of things on Daniel LaPlante. He's still incarcerated to this day. It looks like he's not going to be able to get out anytime soon. I want to talk about him being released from juvenile.
Yeah.
Because this would be hard for me as a judge or whoever is responsible for that. Because if you look at what he went to juvenile for, it's kind of tricky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did... Of course, right on the walls, I'm going to kill you all with a knife in the so that's pretty horrific. Mm-hmm. That's more than just
That's more than just sneaking in and moving some stuff around.
And breaking in and things. But I don't know. It would be very difficult for me. This is reason 9 million that I didn't become a judge.
This would be
so difficult for me to make this call on allowing this juvenile to be released or not.
But he was released on probation, right? Or he's out on bail.
Bail.
Okay, so he had never been sentenced in juvenile yet, right?
I guess not, because I guess that was coming.
Mm-hmm.
But then all this other stuff happened.
Yeah.
But then, just the allowing him to be released on bail, that's a tough call.
That is tough.
I don't know.
I mean, bail exists for a reason. I mean, and I'm sure there's a checklist.
Had he not been.
Three people would be alive.
Four people. She was
four
pregnant.
Four people, that's right.
It was obviously an expensive bail, too. His mother had to refinance her house to get it.
And he obviously did not care about that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because she did. I'm sure. Oh, yeah.
Go, no, go ahead.
I'm sure she didn't get that money back. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess he didn't skip bail. Mm-hmm. I don't know. No, but if he post it, then yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
well, and he was living with her, mm-hmm. but he didn't have a job. He was. That was some of the things that his brother had noticed, and another one of his brother's friends was that he had money, but he didn't have a job. Mm. So, of course, that's fishy.
That's yep. a red flag.
And they know his history. And then the brother actually reported seeing the telephone from the cable box from the Gustafson house. Yeah. And he also, they had some coins that had been stolen that were pretty specific that he saw. His brother had, but yeah. this was before anybody was murdered. Mm-hmm. So he's thinking his brother's a thief.
Yeah. Well, you talked about the call for the judge, I think, and this was 87. So maybe our friend John Douglas at the FBI hadn't become as famous as he has since yet. But John Douglas, I guarantee I can tell you what he would have said to the judge. That little bastard's going to kill somebody if you let him out.
Probably so, yeah.
John Douglas fits the profile to a T.
Definitely smart enough to see that coming, yes. for sure. And it was very, yeah, I don't even know how far they were in the advancement of their whole serial killers. And they're probably still very much in the learning process. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that was all throughout the 80s, I think, that was going on.
So, That would have been a tough call for me, though, as a judge, which is, it's a good thing that I'm not. I would not be an effective judge, so that's, you know.
But it probably also just ran with the bail schedule, you know, like he's
That's what I was trying to say earlier, yes.
And this is the law, because, like, right. I mean, you've got, I think, I mean, it's got to be probably, like, murder before you can, like, just deny someone bail, you know.
Yeah, you're especially pretty, then. You're pretty, bound by the law.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
And all he had done was what? Burglary, breaking and entering, and what would you call
writing? You might could say making stalking? Some threats.
Stalking.
Like, threats, yeah.
It was stalking even a thing in the 80s?
I don't remember. I don't know if even like terrorism.
I feel like in the 80s there were a lot of things that were not a crime that are today.
Yeah.
That's
true. That.
Sure.
It just different time, wasn't it?
It was indeed. I vaguely remember it well.
Anyway, so I encourage you to look into the family, the Gustafsons, because they sort of get lost in the urban legend shuffle.
Always the way.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
But, Andrew passed away in 2014. So when he passed away, he didn't know the appeals. Everything was still going on. So he wasn't really sure if this guy was going to get out or not. Mm-hmm. So I hate that Andrew didn't have, you know, a security in that when he passed away. But that's pretty pretty horrible to have to go through. I do know that Andrew was able to remarry at some point in his life.
That sounds like he cleared some hurdle. Because
I don't know if he had another family or not. Right. I didn't really see anything about that. But I do know that he did eventually remarry. Mm-hmm. Because in one of the court cases or one of the appeals or whatever they quote her, where she's saying he should rot in jail, mm-hmm. of course.
Agreed.
Yeah, because she said her husband just lived a nightmare every day.
Sure
still,
he
did. Can't imagine.
With I'm everything.
Like, it's like, just got chills.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I like, see that. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, we needed the disclaimer for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is the case of Daniel LaPlante, the boy in the walls.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for tuning in again to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. Today is episode number 196.
And it's also...
We're counting down to 200.
It's also, 2 days till Valentine's Day?
That's right.
Ooh, yes, happy.
So consider that your reminder. Go get your wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, lover, whatever. You got 2 days to throw something together if you've already forgotten. If you're
hurry.
You're supposed to.
Yeah, they got the Valentine's show at Easy Street.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up on this this coming Friday, the Motown show.
Motown.
Tickets available Valentine's Day. easystreet.ticketleap.com /Motown17, I think. Anyway, you'll see it on the home screen when you get there. 15 bucks a piece. You better get a ticket. It may be sold out already.
And you know what? Buy some roses and a box of chocolate, too, if you've forgotten. Yeah. They're going to be picked over, but you got to do that's what you got to do. Go do it. Hurry, quickly.
All right, guys, say something nice about us on your podcast platform of choice. Apple iTunes is fine. 5 stars. Leave your name. We'll give you a shout out. But we prefer if you listen on Spotify.
Yes. Thank you.
So do that if you can. Go to our website, truecrimeoneasystreet.com.
Yep.
Suggestions are welcome always. Today's episode was a suggested topic, I believe.
Yes, and I don't remember by who. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com. Guys, is that it? Are we done?
We're done.
Good night, everybody.